So when someone brings you a problem, it is only natural for you to want to fix it. And chances are, people will expect you to solve this problem because you often do so. In that split second before you respond, Patterson, marching into the office of his intern and demanding to do more than just point out awkward sentences. Ask the people to complete the fix. Use simple questions such as, what solutions do you see to this problem? How would you propose to solve this? To do to fix this? Most important, don't assume responsibility for fixing problems. Put the problem back on their desk and encourage them to stretch themselves. AWK asks for an FIX. Number four, hand back. When someone asks you for their opinion, it can be hard not to take over. For some, the tendency, their hands afraid to speak out, lest it turn into a hostile takeover. When you see your team members are struggling, offer help, but have an exit. These conversations can happen anywhere. In a conference room, sitting in your office one-on-one, or during a spontaneous regard, you visualize the point in the conversation when you can symbiotically give the pen back. Imagine yourself at the whiteboard, adding a few ideas to the collective thinking on the board. You finish your thought and you hand the pen back. This gesture lets your colleagues know they are still in the lead and they are accountable to finish the job. Here are some of the statements that signal that you are handing back the pen. I'm happy to help think, but I'm still looking for you to lead this going forward. Or, you are still in the lead on this. Or, I'm here to back you up. What do you need from me as you lead this? Each of the above is a simple entry point, but done repetitively, these act as a multiplier effect within your organization. The multiplier effect. When multipliers invest resources and confidence in others, give them the ownership of their success, they uncover the vast intelligence and capabilities that lies within us. Muhammad Yunus, 2006 laureate and father of the microcredit movement, said, each person has tremendous potential. She or he alone can influence the lives of others, households, their communities, their nations, within and beyond his or her own time. Multipliers and awareness to allow others to apply their full intelligence to work at hand, and also to expand their scope and influence. The independence they create in others also allows the investor to becoming a serial multiplier. The math is simple but powerful. The immediate multiplier effect is that multipliers get on average twice the capabilities from someone they lead. When extrapolated across an average organization size of approximately 50 people, that's the equivalent of adding an additional 50 people. Repeated over potentially 10 different leadership roles over the course of a career, that is an additional 500 people. Multipliers continuously double the size free. This 2x return in perpetuity for leading like a multiplier makes a compelling business case, even to the most discerning investor. Hill Road. Overview. The multiplier formula. The micromanager versus the investor. Micromanagers manage every detail in a way that creates dependence on the leader and their presence for the organization to perform. Investors give investment and ownership they need to produce the results independent of the leader. The three practices of the investor. Need, give ownership for the end goal, stretch the role. 2, invest and coach, provide backup. 3, hold people accountable, give it back, expect completed work consequences, make scorecard visible. Becoming an investor. Let them know who is boss. Let nature take its course for the thick. Hand back the pen. Unexpected findings. Multipliers do get involved in the operational details, but they keep ownership with the people. 2. Multipliers are rated 42% higher at delivering world-class results than their diminisher counterparts. Chapter 7. Becoming a Multiplier. When I let go of what I am, I become what I might be. Lao Tzu. Bill Campbell of Intuit began his career over 30 years ago as a collegiate football coach at an Ivy League university. As a coach, he was smart, hard-hitting. He was recruited into the consumer technology business. He operated in much the same way. As a young marketing manager at Kodak, he would over and rewrite the business plans if he saw them failing. While working under detail-oriented John Sculley at Apple Computer, he burrowed into every single detail in the business and directed every decision and action. He said, quote, I drove everyone. I was a real diminisher. Believe me, I made every decision and pushed everyone around. I was really bad, unquote. Confessions, diminisher. Bill recalls one of his worst moments. During an important staff meeting, one member of his management team asked a simple question. Bill, annoyed at the uninformed manager, turned to him and sharply replied, replete with colorful language, quote, that's the dumbest question I ever heard, unquote. The room went silent. Bill continued the meeting, uninterrupted by any other annoying questions. Over the next few weeks, he noticed that most everyone stopped asking him questions. He single-handedly had dismantled the group's curiosity. While at Claris, as hard-hitting leadership continued, a close colleague came to him and confided, quote, hey, Bill, we all came here because we're looking for you to your old ways. You're pushing everyone around and making all the decisions, unquote. Bill knew she was right. And this wasn't the only near mutiny. 2 months into starting another company, one member of his management team approached him and said, quote, I'm here representing the whole group. If you don't let us do our jobs, we are going to regret coming here. We don't want to leave, but we need to be able to do our jobs, unquote. Bill in plays at fourth down and 1 yard to go. He knew it was hurting his company and jeopardizing his team of exceptionally smart players, and he wasn't willing to lose them. Becoming a multiplier. The counsel from two bold colleagues was just self-awareness that Bill needed. He could see his need for a course correction, and fortunately he made it. And telling less, he began to develop a deep appreciation for what his colleagues knew. And as he recognized the diminishing effect he had on his management team, he began to direct other diminishers in his organization. He began to counsel them. He recalled one person in particular who chronically needed to prove he was the smartest guy in the room. Bill sat down and explained, I don't care how brilliant you are yourself. If you keep this up, you are going to bring the organization to its knees. You are terrific, but you can't work here like this. Bill became a better leader over time. It was a steady transition that happened naturally, a desire to preserve his team and to realize the value of the incredible talent he had attracted. By the time Bill became CEO at Intuit, he led the company past the $1 billion mark in 2000, and he had finally uncovered the multiplier inside of him. A multiplier of multipliers. Since retiring from his role as CEO, Bill has remained on the Intuit board, this time coaching early stage startup companies. He now plays the role of mentor, a leader who has been there before, made the mistakes, and learned from those mistakes. He works closely with venture capital partners, and the respective roles are clear. He sees invest, and Bill grows the talent. He develops the CEO and the key leaders so the company can grow to its market potential. What does Bill do to cultivate the CEOs? To a great extent, he builds multipliers. He teaches what he has learned himself and claims, quote, "If it can be learned, it can be taught," unquote. He helps those highly intelligent and often young CEOs learn how to leverage the intelligence inside their own organization. And the CEOs he has coached have progressed to build some of technology's most prominent companies, such as Amazon.com, Google, and many more. Recently, Bill helped one CEO transform his executive staff meetings from put-out sessions to rigorous debates on the jugular business issues. Before, the meetings followed a predictable format. Each person around the table would give report, informing their colleagues of progress being made and issues within their function. Bill sat on many of the staff, utilizing of the enormous brain power in the room. He counseled, quote, "You are not getting anything out of these staff meetings. You need to engage your people on the biggest issues." He asked the CEO to prepare 5 topics that were crucial to the company. The CEO then emailed the list in advance and asked each person to think through the issue and come prepared with data and opinions. The CEO opened his day by asking his management team to take off their functional hat and put the company hat on. He then launched into the first issue. Should we be in the services space or should we get... One executive cited the reasons they should stay in the space. Another argued the contrary. Each member of the team chimed in and his or her perspectives. The CEO listened carefully, made the decision, and then outlined the implications and actions. One team member stepped up and said, "I've got it. I'll take it from here." The CEO then moved into the next topic, and the next debate ensued. Bill reflects on his work coaching and advising some of Silicon Valley's CEOs. He says, quote, "I can help them see it differently. I kick them out of their comfort zones and I ask." Bill began his career as a diminisher, telling people what to do and calling all the plays. Now he plays the role of multiplier, where he asks the hard questions others think. But his leadership journey did not end there. Bill Campbell is not just a multiplier. He has become a multiplier of multipliers, building other powerful leads and multiply intelligence and capabilities around them. Bill's journey from diminisher to multiple similar leaders that have been studied and raised a number of questions. Can someone with diminisher roots actually become a multiplier? Can the authentic? Does journey happen passively over time through the wisdom that comes with maturity? Or can it be accelerated through? In this chapter, address these questions and explore the journey of becoming a multiplier. We'll offer examples of leaders making the transition, guide you with a framework and a set of tools to help you choose to lead more like a multiplier. You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From Active, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying, visit the SPCA website at www.spca.bc.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 90.0 FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenari, professional futurist. Welcome back. Looking at flyers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman, with a foreword by Stephen R. Covey. From resonance to resolve. As various people have heard these ideas and read this book, I have observed a nearly universal three-step reaction. Resonance. People tell us that the distinction between diminishers and multipliers vividly reflects their reality and that they have experienced these dynamics and actions. They usually remark, "Yes, I have worked for this guy." Two, realization of the accidental diminisher. Virtually all readers have confessed that they see some degree of a diminisher within themselves. For some, there are only trace amounts of behavior. They realize that their well-meaning management practices in all probability are having a diminishing effect on people they work with. Resolve to be a multiplier. Number three. After identifying their own diminisher tendencies, they build conviction to become more of a multiplier. They have a genuine desire, but they are overwhelmed by the standard of the multiplier and the apparent magnitude of the task of becoming one. 18 years in management roles in corporations myself, I recognize why learning to lead like a multiplier can feel overwhelming. For a start, in organizational cultures into the diminisher side, multiplier leadership isn't often the norm. The path of least resistance is frequently the path of the diminisher. And while I challenge, I've also worked with leaders who have grown, become multipliers, and realized the benefits of this approach. It is not hard to be a multiplier, but it's definitely easier to be a diminisher. Twin obstacles. There are two people encounters they consider the multiplier effect to leadership. Let's address them in turn. One, stuck underneath the diminisher. I hear the following said often by aspiring multipliers. Quote, "I want to lead this way, but my boss doesn't, so I can't." Unquote. Herein lies the notorious boss factor. I heard this first from an executive vice president in a large corporation. Jim had grown up in a home where intelligence was prized, not having the answer. Jim was smart, performed well in school, and went on to gain an elite university education and build a successful career. The foundation of superior knowledge of the market and the business he ran. In his current role, this dynamic was exacerbated because he worked for a president who was also a bona fide diminisher. Jim had a significant problem because his own need to know it all was shutting down the intent. Feedback recognized the problem and wanted to become a better leader. In contemplating the new mindset and practices of a multiplier, he became hopeful, enthusiastic. He experimented with some of the practices and received resounding positive feedback from his colleagues and employees. His hope turned to discouragement and wondering how his boss would react. He said, quote, "This isn't going to work. You know my boss. He lead this way, so why should I?" Unquote. He had a good point. He did not know his boss, and I knew Jim wouldn't receive much support from him. But I also knew that he wouldn't encounter active resistance either. I knew the organization would perform better if he managed like a multiplier, and the results would speak for themselves. I asked them, quote, Jim, has it ever occurred to you that you could be a better leader than your boss, unquote? By the reaction on his face, I could tell that it hadn't. I asked again, quote, what would happen if you gave yourself permission to be better than your boss, unquote? He was perhaps the idea that he didn't have to imitate and be limited by the leadership of his superiors. I watched as he assumed a new approach to leadership, one in which he asked more than he told, then shined the spotlight on the knowledge of others rather than on himself. I watched as he wanted to become CEO of two companies. There is a hidden assumption in many organizations that people are not elected or even allowed to outlead their bosses. The layers of the ORG chart appear to form a glass ceiling that caps leadership. Possible that a multiplier can thrive in a diminisher environment. But how? Can you be a multiplier while working for a diminisher boss? Given the extraordinary results that multipliers achieve through others, many believe that it is possible. Give yourself permission to be better than your boss, and then watch the organization take notice. 2. Overloaded and overwhelmed. A second related obstacle as multipliers often face overwhelmed. They are typically already functioning on overload and cannot find the time needed to fund their development. This time crunch is particularly acute for any leader who's been operating as a diminisher. Because after all, it takes a lot of time to be tyrannical, micromanaging know-it-all. And it sucks much needed time and energy to work for one. Diminishers not only drain others, they can exhaust themselves trying to... Yes, becoming a multiplier requires an investment. It takes initial effort to understand one's current impact on others and to formulate new approaches. But becoming a multiplier doesn't necessitate extra... It doesn't have to be hard. You can take the lazy way. In fact, the lazy way works best. In future shows, we're going to look at what it means to take the lazy way, lying in a hammock in the garden. It is a way of speaking about how to become a multiplier can often be infinitely easier than being a diminisher. Being a diminisher means keeping control. Keeping control means putting enormous amount of energy to showing your powers. Some reasons why being the opposite, being a multiplier, can actually be much easier, requiring less energy. And so that can be called a... And we're going to be looking at how we can be an accelerator, work the extremes, start with the assumptions, and take the 30-day multiplier challenge. We're going to be explaining all of these in the next show. So please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Radio FM.
CJSF is 90.1 FM, broadcasting from the heights of Burnaby Mountain.
Well, this here's the story about Cheese Please. If you like your music silly, gonna get what you need. Celebs who thought they could sing crazy remakes and kids tunes, nothing Seacrest would play. Anywhere else these songs would be teased, but we love them for their quirks, and so will you on Cheese Please. Cheese Please. Oh yes, Cheese Please.
Cheese Please. In color. Here are your hosts, Snarf Dude, and...
Thank you, Mr. Announcer. It's another edition of Cheese Please. My name is Snarf Dude.
And that means I'm Daffodil.
Bringing you the wacky, warped, and weird every week as we hang out here in the bunker, watching TV, digging out the cheese, and other lazy things as we watch out and take care of all the vehicles here in the bunker before their owners come.
They're coming soon. I hear they're happening.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
They asked me to bake a cake. That's how I know.
I see. And you're going to do that.
Oh, of course.
Oh, huh. Yeah, okay.
I get much better tips if I bake cakes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh. Does anyone wax?
Oh, no. The cars are clean. Oh,
okay. I thought we'd have to call Mr. Miyagi.
No. Cars are clean. Okay. Wax on, wax off, no.
Good. Good. I just want to make sure on that one. Anyway, show this week, we're going to get a little tipsy. Well, not really. Not really. Some of the songs, maybe. Songs and Night Traps for the Man of No Distinction, along with Irving. I know. No, I said, yeah, it's an album, okay?
I know, and I'm laughing because you said Night Traps instead of Night Caps.
Oh, yeah.
Trapped, so I get it.
As well, in the celebrity slip-up, you may not know him, but man, I'll tell you a little bit about Bernie Hamilton as his character of Captain Dobie on the 1970s television series Starsky and Hutch. He cut an album, he cut a record, totally opposite to his character.
Okay.
To sum it up in a nutshell. But we're going to go Hawaiian, starting off the show with Hawaiian Moon shortly by, can you pronounce that?
Moki Kahui and his orchestra.
Thank